That's because I'm so young and youthful, and I remind you of what you
Was
once
she like
had.
3 years younger than you or something? I had
no, that's good.
I am way younger than him.
What is it?
If I had a fucking video camera, maybe I could try and eyeball a little bit more accurately.
You wouldn't know. She dyes her hair. Don't be silly.
No, my hair's natural now. Back to natural.
Until you get greys.
Oh no, I still have the greys. Yeah. They're like.
Layer 2 Pixelcast episode, I am gonna say 165-ish. Yeah, just fucking pull the curtain back right now. We're recording a bunch of these in advance because I'm going to be traveling and I do not want to take a gigantic microphone and portable SSD around the world with me. So I'm your host, Tim Henderson, coming at you probably from a month before you're listening to this. And yeah, to put very clear things on, this is a unique episode. We're not really talking about anything recent. It is one game themed. The show notes are going to make that explicitly clear. Huso, what game will we be talking about?
Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Yeah, that little thing that nobody's been talking about at all over, like, definitely didn't cause a giant buzz 3 months ago or whatever. Definitely didn't even, like, get Jen onto a first ever Pixelcast ever. All right, fine. You just cackle. That's
all I do. That's all I do. This is me for the whole podcast now.
Just cackling.
Yeah.
So yeah, Tim and Huso have discussions, and Jen just kind of is like fingers steeple.
I'm here.
Yeah. Without a video camera to make it.
Without
any
a video, it's
audio.
Just a flashing Jenny. It's not even flashing, really. It's just sitting there. Yeah. So this is going to be, like we said, spoiler cast more or less. We're going to divide the show into half. Half still, with the second half being 100% we are going to talk about the ending, we're going to talk about the last chapter, try and make sense of it all, unpack the themes, all that stuff. First half being, you know, just reminiscing on the things we did and didn't like about the game, feelings of it. That said, I'm not going to be very strict about telling people to stop things because they're spoilery. If you have not played this yet in any capacity, you do not want the tiniest thing spoiled, I don't know, go download an episode of Nextlander or something.
Yeah.
But please download us again when we drop the next one. Like, there are a million gaming podcasts out there.
Yeah.
But yeah, to start off and put this game in its place a little bit, because all this talk about this is like a front runner for Game of the Year. But I have to say, I was playing Assassin's Creed last night, Shadows, yep. And the mission came up called Pet the Dog. I was like, all right, this is already pretty good. Huso, did you ever get to this?
Yeah.
Oh my god, this mission is so good. It's actually so what I hoped for was that you would just go and there'd be a big dog and you'd pet it and it would like go ba-dum and like give you 1,000 experience or something with a little firework show. No, you go there, the dog is beaten up to shit.
Aww.
Poor little thing. And you can somehow basically talk to it. Like, now is like speaking to it in Japanese and the dog seems to understand her and she seems to kind of understand its woofs. And it's like, oh, so your master got killed and like, okay, can you show me to the people who done fucked up your life? And so you follow the dog, like, down a hill, this little encampment, to, like, this cartoonishly evil woman who's bitter that she didn't get the inheritance that her brother did or something along those lines. And, like, clearly just, you know, poisoned his dinner. And does not do much to, like, hide that facade. You know, she claims he choked on chicken bones or something, but it's like, no, this is clear. And then... And she's like, the dog starts growling at her and she's like, stupid mutt or whatever. And then you get two conversation options. One is more or less like, hey, be nice to the dog. And the other one is, bitch, this dog is a good dog. I'm going to kill you now. Yep. So of course I chose a bitch. This is a good dog. I'm going to kill you now.
Good. Good. The only thing that you can pick.
And so I murdered this woman and a couple other people in the camp and the dog's on her. And then we found a key to the treasure, followed the dog back to the hill. So I got the treasure, and the treasure was just a note saying the dog likes to be scratched behind the ears. I'm like, that's it. Okay, I'm sorry, Clair Obscur, you are not even the best French game of the year anymore.
Yes, I do remember that question, but we're not here to talk about assassins.
We're not. We're here to talk about a giant balloon that baths red wine.
I think, well,
Do you want to rewind
I finished
a bit
it
more
a while
first?
Ago, but Jen, you did the review for Player 2. So give us your lowdown on Clair Obscur.
It's the best game I've ever played in my whole life. I'm not even kidding. I started playing this game on a day where I was like hungover, and I was like, "Ugh, all right, I gotta do this review." This game brought me back to life, and like made me cry. It made me feel terrible. I hated everything about it, because it's so sad from the beginning. And you're like, you begin the game, and it's all very pretty. And, you know, you're Gustav and you're going to go give this pretty girl a flower and tell her that you love her. And then you realize that this pretty girl you're giving a flower is going to die, and everyone's going to die, and the whole world's going to die. And you're going to go on this quest to try to save everyone. And you're like, I've been playing this game for 10 minutes. I'm sort of getting the feeling that no one's going to live, because that's not the vibes I get from this world and this game.
The weird vibes I get from, like, she's going to die, because you're all at the harbour, and it's got this, like, it really feels like the lead up to, like, the fireworks at Sydney Harbour at New Year, except instead of fireworks, a whole bunch of people are just going to turn into rose petals and disappear.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it circumvented my expectations at every single point, because whatever, like, I really thought that it was going to be this cute, beautiful little thing, and then it was like, no, it's death. It's all death. Everything is death.
God, have you never watched a European film before in your life?
No, never. I only watch things like Happy Gilmore and things that make me happy.
Oh my God, if you grew up in nothing but Adam Sandler and you start playing something vaguely art, boy, are you going to be in a ride for the rest of your life.
I normally don't like read anything, watch anything, play anything that makes me feel feelings. And this is all Clair Obscur did. Like, it made me feel all my feelings.
Yeah. The whole tone of it is like, I'm belittling this a little bit. It's just the thing that came to mind is, so Jen has grown up and she's just watched videos of man gets a football in the groin.
Yeah.
And then along comes fucking Barney, like in a moment of sobriety. I'm hoping that like everybody listening to this like is an old 90s Simpsons fan. And makes this crazy don't cry for me, I'm already gone, black and white art house video. And she's like, so sad.
Yeah, look, it's definitely got that vibe, doesn't it? Like, there's nothing ever safe in the world.
No.
I mean, very early spoilers on, but your first stop at the island where the quest takes place is just to watch everyone get slaughtered by some psycho old dude. And, like, it doesn't really get much better from there as far as, you know, life and death is concerned. Like, this game doesn't want you to be comfortable at all. It wants you to know that, you know, at any point something bad's going to happen. And quite often it does.
Yeah, it's very melancholy vibe the whole way through, which is wild for a game with such fast-paced combat.
Mm.
Oh, the combat. Cool. The combat was so good. Like, I love a turn-based game. I'm a Final Fantasy diehard until the end of time. And I love a turn-based game because I don't have great reflexes, so I'm not good with the action combat. And that made playing this game really hard because you have to parry and you need good timing to get through the battles and not die.
When you go back to Assassin's Creed Shadows, you are really fucking good at parrying in that game. Once you're clear of Obscur, I'm going to blow that up now.
But I found the combat. I mean, like I said, I love turn-based combat, and I know that people were really turned off this game because of the turn-based combat. But it's not like easy. You know, when it's not your turn, you can relax and sit back and do nothing. Like you are working to win every single battle. There's no downtime. There's no relaxing time. There's like every single battle is a slog if you want to get through it.
And what I like is how a lot of these turn-based games that I've played in the past, anyway, this style of RPG, a lot of the characters tend to be a little similar. Like, not saying they have the same powers or anything, but the way you use them is pretty much the same. Whereas in this game, every single character has its own way to play. Like, you really have to know each of your characters that you've got in your party and what they're best at, what they do well, what they're not so good at. Because if you don't, you're going to be in strife. You're going to just flailing away at nothing.
I'm going to get into straight-up spoiler territory here because it's fucking annoying that I finally got the hang of how Gustav worked.
Yeah.
finally had it, like, figured out. Because you're right. Like, they all have, like, unique mechanics and mentalities behind them, which means that you're more likely to have favorite. But yeah, I finally got, like, his whole thing figured out, and then, like, 20 minutes later, he's dead.
I
remember I was playing with Mael a lot, and I was like, oh, I don't really love how she plays in battle, so I wasn't really using her. And then a couple of cutscenes in, I was like, oh, I think this girl's going to be kind of important to the story. maybe I'll use her a little bit more often. And I'm glad that I did, because by the end, like, she fucking slaps. Like, she destroys everything.
And the good thing, I always had her because she's got she had a move that destroyed shields instantly. No matter how many shields that the baddies had, you could destroy all the shields.
Oh, that saved my life. Yeah.
Yeah, that got me through more than one occasion, that particular thing. I ran with Mael, Verso, and
CL.
CL, yeah.
Yeah, that was my team. CL, yeah. I love her. My darling, my love. I loved her. I loved her so much.
Yeah, she's probably my favorite character of all of them too.
Yeah, me too. Well, that and Verso, because Verso is Ben Starr, and anything Ben Starr does, like, I will get on my knees and kiss his earth. I don't care. I love him.
So I'm assuming everybody anyway. Had those two hook up, yeah?
Yeah, it did. Actually, that was my one complaint about the game, is that I thought the little romance tack on towards the end was a bit meh. I was like, game, I don't really think the game needed this. I think the game was perfectly fine without it.
I don't mind it in that they explained it and she was very honest, like, hey, this is just a bit of hookup and, you know, a bit of fun. There's nothing serious here. So, yeah, I guess that didn't feel too bad for me. It was just like two adults going, right, end of the world.
End of the world, fucking fun. Why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
My main issue there was actually less that and more, like, it was clearly drawing a lot of inspiration from Persona there, but it kind of let you have your cake and eat it too much, to the point where you could just take your time and walk around and, like, just level up the relationship with everybody. There was no, like, having to prioritize this or that or any sort of time management. You were just kind of able to, like, walk along and kind of, like, log up everything and kind of, like, just get the menus going. It's like, how long are these guys staying awake? Like, didn't I just stay up for, like, 3 hours drinking with this guy and now I'm having, like, three more in-depth conversations?
Yeah. I guess so. I also think they didn't quite do well enough at signposting this sort of thing and how important it was to take a break at the campfire. Like, for a long time, I kind of fell into the habit. I didn't need a camp break because my health was good, so I didn't bother. But and I realized after, I reckon, about a third of the game that I was missing stuff by not stopping in the camps and having a chat. Like, so, yeah, I guess it would have been nice.
It depends on your style. It's my nature. My complaints, probably the wrong word, but I'm the sort of person who, like, wants to lose themselves in the world in an RPG, which means I kind of like walking around towns and speaking to random people. And if you can just have it aesthetically, just sit there at the bar and have a drink and do that. Obviously, the setup of this game means there's not a whole lot of towns that you're going to be visiting.
No. Well, the ones you do visit are populated by odd
weird puppet
enemies.
Wooden.
Yeah. Mm.
Who just really want to fight.
Yeah. Like,
I fully didn't clock, by the way, that they are paintbrushes.
Yeah.
Like, until my husband played the game and then he clocked it. I'm like, of course they're paintbrushes. Of course they are. Like, duh, you idiot.
What were they, the gestrels? Gestrels?
Yeah.
They were fun. They were fun.
They were great.
Yeah.
But then when that, like, what's his name? Renoir. When Renoir kills the little kid one, I was like, well... Well, that's not on, mate. You can't kill the little kid.
No.
Even though he's, you know, they come back to life or whatever. But also, speaking of the little kid, did you run into the guy in the world that's like, oh, I've lost nine of my
kids?
I
found like three of them.
Yeah. I found none. I found friggin' none of them. I'm like, there's nine little kids running around this world, probably need death. And I'm like, well, sorry, I didn't find any of you. My bad.
I think I ended up finding five because you get a bonus power that allows you to break some map shit.
I found none.
Did not get any bonus power for doing that, definitely. Although, yeah, the map script, there was a weird choice. Like, I guess it's a completionist attitude, but like, because I remember when we were talking about this game in the regular show, and I'm like, okay, I'm blanking on the name of my favorite character. Winebuffer.
Oh, SK.
SK.
SK, yeah.
I referred to him as like just a spaceship, basically. And like, I hadn't gotten there yet, but it's like, he's got, like, he'd become a boat already. It's like, he's going to become an airship, maybe a rocket. Like, this is just how JRPG structures, which is games clearly drawn from, work. But he doesn't do that until it's like, go to the end game or go and do a whole bunch of leveling shit. Like, it doesn't become a key part of the exploration.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to explore in that world that is really not needed at all. Like, there's a lot to just wander around and do.
Stuff to take in, yeah.
Yeah. Which I guess that's my biggest complaint about the game is the third act. Not that the how it ended was bad at all. Like, the final story mission was fantastic. But I feel like labeling it a third act was a bit of a lie, almost. You know, it was more like just an epilogue, or, you know, just the finale. I think they either should have just called it as such, an epilogue, or they should have actually given a bit more like story gameplay in the third act, to be honest.
Yeah, it was just that like hard divide where it's like, okay, this exploration stuff is just off to the side. Like, it's kind of like we're giving you new game plus before you finish it, almost.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So
That's a very like, because in Final Fantasy VII, my other love, like in the original game, that game was on three discs, and the whole last disc is you fight the bad guy and you do all the extra crap in the game that you haven't been doing. Yeah. Like, you go.
But you had the airship well before then, and they couldn't control super well, like, where the discs filled up.
But yeah, the whole last disc is only the, like, it's the last, it's like, boss, 3 hours, all the extra stuff. Yeah, and that's sort of what this felt like to me. It felt exactly like that, like the last boss and all the extra stuff that you had the opportunity to go and do.
Anyway, the music got really fucking awesome in that last chapter, though.
Oh, the music was amazing the whole way through. I loved it.
Yeah. Exceptional score and exceptional art direction. And the art direction makes up... Yeah. For a lot of, I guess, little technical things from creating a game with a small team.
I used Loon a lot as my map character, and the reason why was because for whatever fucking reason, she floated.
Yes.
So you got none of the weird, like, running animations or glitching on the scenery as much, and it just looked smoother.
Yeah, that's what I did too. Yeah. The running around the map was a bit janky, and, you know, those things that just come from being a small, moderately budgeted game. You know, they're just sacrifices that have to be made, I guess. But they put the money where it counted, and I guess you know, that's the key takeaway. I know, and a lot of this bullshit that's going around about only 30 people, that's horse shit. There was lots of contractors, but it was a relatively small team
than a Death Stranding or an Assassin's Creed or a
and GTA. they have to make decisions in that. To make the best game they can with the resources they have. And honestly, their project manager or whoever's in charge of kind of that sort of thinking did a fantastic job. They put the money where it counted. I really did.
I think my feeling is that they probably just trusted a lot of people to do what they do well without trying to control them too much. Like, that art direction did not come from focus testing.
No. God, no. None of it did. This game feels like, there's so many games that feel like they're designed by committee these days, and which is why I think games like that Kojima makes or Suda 51 makes always stand out. They're not necessarily good games, they're not necessarily bad games, but they stand out because they're one person's vision. They're not building by committee. And here I feel like there had to have been one or two people that had a clear vision and everyone built to that vision, because committees don't create art like this. Committees create, you know, fun things, don't get me wrong, but they're just a little generic and a little, you know, because you've got to cater for everyone.
Lowest common denominator.
Yeah. So I feel like there was someone here that was someone, one or two people that were that kind of had the vision, and everyone was building to that vision. And they obviously trusted people to do that, but there had to have been that clear, this is what we're doing kind of guidance, I guess.
I like that one of the things that they put effort towards was physics for the men in their swimsuits.
I didn't even notice.
Oh, I did.
Your perv.
Feels appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, that was great.
Oh, that is funny.
I forgot about the swimsuits entirely, actually. All right.
Yeah, so did I.
Not Jen.
No.
Look, Verso in his tidy whities is really like something to be seen. Okay, so
I mean, it's only fair because I mean I remember Final Fantasy VII and like the way that Tifa's breasts weirdly seem to get bigger over the course of the original game.
Yep.
Which is what I find really weird is that they actually grew. They didn't like just go to put the slider up to 11. Like they slowly
built
progressively.
Them.
Got
yeah.
There.
How they marked the passage of time.
Yeah. They did the same with Lara Croft.
She was 12 at the beginning of the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think though for me the clear thing that stands out about this game is the art design of the enemies of the world of I think that if that doesn't immediately catch you, then you're not going to like this game at all. Like, you can take a look at a screenshot and go, this is for me or it's not, because it is so unique. I mean, the game itself has got some unique features to it, but it is something we've seen before. But what's unique about it is the story and the art. And, wow, it is pretty impressive. And it looks great on PC. I don't know. Did you play it on PlayStation, didn't you, Jen?
Yeah, I did, and it looked really, really good. And I like it ran really, really well on the PS5. I didn't really encounter any bugs or any sort of weirdness. It was really, really good.
What about you, Tim? You were PlayStation, weren't you?
I was PS5 Pro. I still have a slight issue with like overall image quality, which is maybe like kind of clawing at the wallpaper a little bit.
Yeah.
But it's going into this generation, it was like my real bugbear is like going, we're going to have like nice clean images, like match our TV's resolutions. Right. And that has not
happened.
Really happened. And it just gives it like that little bit of that video gamey kind of jaggy look occasionally. Especially since you cannot play this game in quality mode, like unless you set it to easy.
Yeah. Cause of the timing,
just the timing on the, The parries is just so important that like you really need to like set that frame rate to 60. But you know, if you're running a 50 series card with an i9 processor or fucking whatever, you probably play the game at 120.
Yeah, I played it at 120 frames. Yeah.
Look at me, I'm Matt. I play things at 120 frames a second. Me.
I'm a big
shut
dilly.
Up. Fuck off.
But yeah. It was good. It was really good. It ran really well. It actually runs pretty well on the ROG as well. On my ROG LAX, it ran pretty well. So,
look, I really don't need this game on a handheld because I will never surface back into society ever again.
Oh, I would love to see Jess on the train just sobbing into this like gigantic PC slab sitting on her lap.
That's the other thing. Like, my husband, he wanted to play it, so he didn't, while I was reviewing it, he tried not to come in and sort of see me do anything.
Yep.
But there were times where I was like, I was yelling at the TV. There was one point where like, I was screaming because of what happened, and he would come out and like, I'm sitting on the sofa, there are tears streaming down my face. And he's like, are you okay? Can I help you in some way?
Would you like a hot beverage right now?
Yeah, or do you want me to just like go away and leave you to it? Like, there was no keeping a secret how this game was affecting me.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. But we'll save that to the second half spoilers.
Yeah.
Which were probably almost that, actually.
But overall, I'm not a JRPG guy, generally. I've liked some, don't get me wrong.
Dude, if this becomes your favorite game of the year, 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
2 years in a row, man.
Yeah, I don't know that
Infinite Wealth, something is happening.
Infinite Wealth is a very Matthew game, though. The Yakuza runs deep in me, so... but yeah, I don't know that it'll be my favorite game of the year, but it'll certainly be up there, I think. I really, really enjoyed it. Generally, I don't get captured by these sort of games. Generally, I play them a good chunk and then fall off, but this I had to see through to the end. It helps that it's a decent size. I think it was 25 hours.
I finished it in under 30, and I was like, is that for me?
Yeah.
Like, I knew it was fairly short, but...
But that felt perfect to me. There's nothing wrong with a 25-hour game. I don't need 80 hours of Persona. I don't. The thought of that just makes me ill.
I don't have 80 hours. I don't have 120 hours. I don't have the hours of the day. Because then, like, I bought Persona 5 right before I went to Tokyo, because I was like, what a good game to play before I go to Tokyo. I was like, this is awesome, but I don't have the time to sink into finishing this game. Whereas with Clair Obscur, I think my final time was probably closer to 50, because I was running around trying to, you know, see everything so I could write about it.
Yeah.
And then you didn't find any of the children. This is
No, I didn't. But that, I mean, also they're kids and I don't really care.
Exactly.
That much.
I was about to say.
There we are. There it is.
Yeah.
If it was like, find 9 cats, done.
Yeah.
Immediately done. Find 9 dogs to pat.
There are 12 different swimsuits hidden around, each of them a little bit smaller.
Make it something I care about. Kids, it's not going to do it for me.
A gold lame banana hammock for Verso.
Oh, done. Like, I would have paid extra for that. I would have bought the game and paid extra. Digital Deluxe, gimme.
It's like reminding me of the old days of Dead or Alive Beach Volleyball.
Oh, God. Well, there is volleyball in this. There is beach volleyball in this game, and it fucking sucks, dude.
Yeah.
Wait, Jen, have you played any of the Yakuza games just while you're, like, getting really horny about male video game characters? Is it something that we...
No, I never have.
Mm.
What's going to happen to Jen if she actually, like, comes across cute to you? So just giving some experience.
Yeah. I think... Oh, and know what to get Jen for her Christmas present this year.
Just that game and a towel, and I'll be fine.
No, actually, I reckon Jen might be a Mad Dog fan. Knowing Jen, she might be a Mad Dog fan. Yep.
Majima,
yeah.
All right, well, now
Majima,
I have to...
Or like Yakuza 0 Majima before he had taken on the persona.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, you start with 0. That's the way to go.
Just don't pay $80 for the Switch 2 version.
No, God, no.
Pay why would anyone's on wondering Steam, so. Why these Switch 2 third-party games are not selling that well? I have a feeling that the fact that you're charging $80 for something that's probably been on Steam sale for 5 numerous times in the years is...
Yakuza 0 on the current Steam sale is $14.
Oh.
That's actually more than I was expecting. All right.
Well, that's not really going to break
or
the bank.
Or you can buy... the first 6 games for $60.
That's probably worth it, actually. We have gotten slightly sidetracked.
Yes, we have.
All right, you know what? Let's just call it here. We'll take a short break, and when we come back...
we'll talk spoilers.
We'll talk just full-on spoilers.
Yeah. We'll see if we can make Jen cry again.
Yay.
Your telephone and all your scented candles and your dictionary fish tank and the pictures on the mantle. I had sex with your whole kitchen with no boundaries or limits, and your lamp was looking so good that you know I had to hit it. Your wallet and your toothbrush and your jacket and your red hat. Oh, you're mad about the toothbrush, just forget I ever said that. And your carpet and your furniture, your windows and the curtains, and I licked your stamp collection. I ticked your floor for certain. I'm glad I got this off my chest.
And we're back, and hopefully Jenna's gotten all of the giggles out.
Never.
It's tears Never. From now on.
It's tears. Yeah, it's like, if it's laughing, it's going to be a coping mechanism from now on, Jen.
Yeah. let's spoil some shit, shall we?
Let's just like go straight into that last chapter. So yeah, bad guy, not as bad as we maybe thought. The game is in the Matrix, except the Matrix is the painting. Is that pretty much where we...
Yeah, that's not a bad summary. Yep. it's a fantastic examination of using like fantasy to delve into like grief, themes of grief. And it's essentially about a family that's grieving horribly about the loss of their son and how the three other members of the family deal with it. And yeah, like you don't really get that. You get something's going on up until that point in the story, but you don't quite understand what it is.
Yeah, I mean, you've got the whole, like, that ghost girl looks a lot like Mael. Like, what's going on there?
So, yeah, you suspect dodginess, but wow. Like, it just kind of hit you like a hammer that, holy fuck, this was a sad game, just got sadder.
I mean, you defeated the Paintress, hooray! And now literally everybody is dying. It's like...
That bit killed me. Like when you all go back, and then you know everybody's celebrating, and then everybody dies, and Verso just has this look on his face like he knew this was going to happen.
Yeah,
because of course he did. But it was like that. That was when I was like, I bawled my eyes out. I'm like, what the hell do you mean everybody's dead? Like, rewind, go back, fix it. What do I do?
Yeah, it was a wild way to kind of segue into what was actually happening in the game. The way it looked at that kind of grief of the family was it what really stuck with me for the whole game is just how people that are so affected by trauma are doing, and no one's handling it well. Like,
no,
they've all fucked up, right?
Oh, yes.
You know, no one's handling this, the death of Verso in real life, well. And the fact that a part of his soul is trapped in this painting, it makes it so much sadder that, you know, mum's trying to save the piece of his soul and dad's trying to save his wife, and Mael's kind of stuck in between, not knowing what to do. And
well, I mean, Mael doesn't have a lot left outside of the canvas, right? Like, I mean, she has no voice box.
She's horribly disfigured. Mutant, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, everything that, and like, for a young woman, that's, I mean, for anybody, it's horrible, but especially for someone as young as Mael is, like, it's awful. But one of the things that really, really, like, stuck with me to this day still is when you're fighting the Paintress and Renoir, he says this line, and the line is, it's meant to be you and me, not you against me.
Yep.
And that, like, that broke my heart into 1,000 pieces, because that's every single parent who's ever lost a kid, ever. Like, you're meant to stick together, but the first thing you do is tear one another apart because you don't know what else to do, because how do you deal with this horrible, horrible thing that has happened to you?
Yeah, and it really is kind of that examination of how people just don't deal with grief well. And, you know, this is a family that needs some serious therapy, and instead of doing that, they created a fantasy world.
The entire world is like, art therapy has gone way out of control.
Yeah, and it's the fact that you realize at that point that all these things, the gestures and Esquier and all that are creations of Verso.
I mean, that's the wild thing, is they literally explained the existence of these creatures that had no logical explanation away by doing that.
Yeah, and it was just such a well, I guess, plotted and well-written left turn in a game that obviously, I go back to what I was talking about before, where someone had a very clear vision at the start of this game, and I don't think you can do what they did with the story without having that clear vision, and I think it's just turned out perfectly. It really is. It's a game that I won't forget because of that.
It did. The whole, you know, the thing is, like, the whole metaphor of the way the painting works, like, there are so many angles you can look at it from, especially when it makes you make that choice at the very, very end for the technically final fight. It's like going, all right, it's going to interpret it one way, but there are, like,
there are ways.
So, like,
yeah.
Is this entire painting like a metaphor for like just falling into a mountain of cocaine?
Yeah.
That's
what I felt like. It's like a metaphor for shit ways to deal with grief. You know,
yeah.
Some people turn
but
to the bottle.
At the same
time,
it could also be a metaphor for like, I just found alternative friends that my family doesn't approve of, in which case that's actually totally fine.
Yeah.
So in a literal sense within the game, I think a lot of us have had turns on the Matrix and we look back at that and go, like, why the fuck would you get out of there? Like, look at the state of the world. So I fully respect them. I was like, these people are real to me. Like, this world is...
Yeah, I can live here.
Real. Like, I get why you would want to stay there.
Yeah. So, all right. Which endings did we choose?
So I sided with Mael, which gave me a really, really sad piano concert at the end.
Yeah, I did my L first. What about you, Jen?
Do you want the one that I picked first or the one, because I saw both of them.
I've watched both of them too. Yeah.
So do you want the one that first or that I like stand by as the true ending?
What'd you pick?
The first one I picked Miles ending.
Yep. So we all went
three
the same.
Of us, all right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, and I agree. I think Verso's ending is probably, it's sad, but it's happier.
Yeah, I think like it's kind of crazy because in any other situation, I would always pick the needs of the many over the needs of the few. And arguably, Mael's ending is the needs of the many because the entire canvas gets to live and breathe and continue on. Whereas, you know, Verso's depressed as all hell. Yeah. But
yeah, that's when the metaphor gets complicated because these characters are technically real. This painting actually came to life.
But then in this instance, I was like, well, no, you don't really get to run away from your problems forever, which is what Mael is doing. She's escaping her real life, which is kind of crap.
Yeah.
But it's still her real life, whereas everything in the canvas is real, but it's not real.
Yeah. It's a fantasy world. It's no different to someone that's ended up in, say, mental care because they're creating fantasies for themselves to escape grief. This is just a more literal manifestation of that kind of proper psychology that happens, you know. So, I think Verso's – that was the saddest part for me was when Verso says to the piece of his soul that's still painting, and says it's time to stop.
You can stop now. Like,
yeah.
I thought that was the saddest part in the game because it was the recognition that it needed to end, and regardless of how Mael felt, it needed to end.
And the Verso's ending was clearly the like letting go and moving on, whereas the Mael's was tying shit to invisible chains and like forcing them to play an internal loop for all.
Yeah,
but also doing it because. The whole game, he goes around saying, you know, if he had a dream, that would be what he wanted to do. And so Mael made that happen for him. Like he, in her mind, Mael's giving him exactly what he wants. And then you see the look on his face and it's heart-wrenching. Like it's awful to see how sad he is whilst everybody out in the crowd is having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
But he as the like vessel that's keeping this place alive is in complete turmoil.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's going to hang around in my head. That's why I was really happy to do this spoiler cast. There's not many games that I think I want to talk about in detail with the story, but this was definitely one of them. The last one I did was Psychonauts 2, but obviously very different reasons. But once again, talks about head and talks about psychology and things like that. So it's very interesting how it's been translated to a video game and done with such a deft hand, really.
Well, I mean, it's one of the things a video game can do is like force you to make decisions.
Mm.
And in this case, do it in a game that hasn't done it until that point, which is what I think like really probably struck a lot of people. It's like, this isn't a fucking BioWare
Yeah. Like, pick the good or bad ending.
Choices or, left or right. Like, wait, what? You can't really do that in a movie, although I do like the idea, and I'll probably never get to do it, of like making a movie that works in multiple different cuts. And so you just mix up the reels when you send them to theaters.
They did that. There's a movie called 1408. It's a Stephen King novel. There are five different endings.
The one that takes place in the hotel?
In the hotel room, yep.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's five different endings with John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson. And
yeah.
Yeah, so you never know which one you're going to get. So if you watch it on streaming, on different services have different endings.
Oh, it's different services. So I'd be curious if like if they did make like I can almost see like Netflix like working out an anime for this, like a 10 episode series, and if they would find a way to like have two alternative endings that just like play either in different regions or at different times of day, or if it's actually just able to shuffle the files underneath.
Yeah. Well, they are making a movie of Claire Obscure that's already been signed, sealed.
Do you remember her? You say that, but the signed and sealed movies of games before that have never.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So they've bought the rights to make a movie of it. I would be very surprised if we don't see something else in like there's a whole world that they've hinted at outside of the painting that's going on. There's lots of references to something going on in the real world. Between the writers and the painters, obviously two factions of some description. So I really hope they
the war of the creatives.
Yeah, that's cool. We haven't had one of them before. Generally, creatives get along, but you know.
Yeah, tell you what though, if you want to do a multiverse, this is a way more creative way to do it than what fucking Marvel did.
But I'm really excited at the prospect of the world building, and I don't think we're going to get a direct sequel as such to this, as in we won't we get anything in the painting again. But we've got the options.
I don't think we need it.
No, we don't, but we've got like that world to explore still.
Or they could do something completely different, like.
Yeah, and just leave the threads hanging. You don't have to wrap everything up in a neat bow. Yeah.
Some people who hate that, but like. The what if is sometimes more intriguing than the.
Yeah. I think so. Were there any other, like, I mean, we talked about it briefly earlier, but Gustav's death was.
Oh, that was insane. I really didn't see that coming out of anywhere.
No.
I really thought, all right, here's our main character. Cool. Like,
yep.
I thought, like, because you see Verso throughout the, like, act one, and you're like, all right, well, he's going to be, I really thought he was going to be, like, whoever he was, was going to be the true baddie, and, like, Gustav's the hero of the game. No. when that scene happened, I kept waiting for, like, you know, he's going to be fine, right? Like, something's going to happen, and he's going to be okay, right? Or we're going to bring him back to life or something. No.
Nope.
That's it. He's gone. He's dead.
I thought he and Verso looked and sounded similar enough that my initial thought was like these are alternate reality versions of each other.
Yeah, I thought there was some time travel shenanigans or something going on, or I actually thought they were the same person as well to begin with in some way.
Meanwhile, Jen clearly never played Phantasy Star 4 because this kill off the lead character trick has been done.
No, I have not.
Yeah, I haven't seen him a lead. Go like that. Like Jackie's the in Cyberpunk's probably that was pretty.
Man, I liked Jackie.
Everyone liked Jackie. and they knocked him off pretty early on.
Phantasy Star 4 does it. Like the lead character for the first 3 hours gets killed and then you pick up as a sidekick.
It is a cool twist.
Yeah, it's not done very often. I'm referring back to like a 1994 Sega Mega Drive game to lay down another example.
Yeah, so it got me. I didn't, and I was like you, Jen. I expected him to come back. I even probably for the next halfway through Act Two, I still expected.
Yeah, I kept waiting.
Yeah.
for us to find a way, and then you know you go and you you do like his burial, like you place his bionic hand on the thing, and that again made me cry again because I was like, this is so. Fucking sad, dude. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And that, and you sort of start getting the point that Mael's the lead there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It was pretty good.
So but then, like, you see it. You see it on the, when you look at the cover art, yeah. He's not there. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I was like, oh, okay. I probably, if I'd paid any attention to anything ever, I probably would have been able to pick it. But yeah, he's not.
It's just like, there. Hide the shit in plain sight. Like, I mean, the thing is, because we're so sensitive to cover art just being an attention grabbing image that doesn't have any meaningful information in it.
Yep.
That, like, when it does, you can still, like, miss it entirely. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. And then I guess the other big key point was when we find out that they're in a painting. I remember playing that bit at the end of Act Two and sending Jen a message saying, there better be fucking something else after this because this is the shittest ending ever. So I killed the paintress, let everyone dies, and I went, this is fucked. And I sent Jen a message. Did you all feel the same there?
Oh God, yeah. I was. Go on, Tim.
No, I was the pilot going, I don't know if I'll like this, but I'm going to respect the shit out of it if this is how they roll credits.
Yeah,
like if this is a swing they took.
Yep. It was a ballsy move, but fucking like, annoyed me.
But you know what? Because of like they could have done it and they could have ended it, and that would have been the game. Because it's like, well, the whole thing is sad, right? Yeah. Like, it would have, if they had ended it there, I would have been like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
All right. Like, like that would have wrapped it up in a nice little bow. I still would have been like, all right, cool. Like, horribly depressing game.
Yeah.
But cool. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But then the epilogue and you find out everything about the painting and
it doesn't really get happier.
No, it doesn't. You never get a smile.
No, there's no happiness. There's none of that. There's that little brief window of happiness where, like the all four of them, like Gustav, Lune, Ciel, and Mael are all together. And, you know, they're wandering around and they're having a good little time. And you're talking to Eskia and Eskia's neighbor, whose name I forget, but who's like a grumpy old bastard.
Yeah.
Like, that's the happiest moment in the whole game. In 60 hours of the game, that's the only time any of them have any fun.
I think they're having fun when, like, Eskia was, again, as I opened this up, like, just barfing wine everywhere. Like,
yeah. The wine barf was fun. The village of the gestures.
I would
probably
not be sure if I wanted to drink it, honestly. Like, I know Eskia is, like, a cloth bag with a face mask on or something. But...
Yeah, like a human wine cask. I would 100%.
It's like a wine bag. It's the goon bag. This is not going to be the good shit.
Yeah.
But it's French.
It's French. So, it's French.
It's French. It's French.
I promise you, France can probably also make cheap, nasty wine. I don't think it's a...
I don't think they're playing Goon of Fortune with Eskia, though.
I mean, I liked Eskia a lot, though. He was...
I did, too. I really did like him. I liked all the characters that were all so well-written, and they all were beautifully voice-acted, every single one of them.
They were all excellent. Yeah. I mean, Ben Starr obviously stand out great, but
I thought Jennifer English was fantastic as Mael.
Jennifer English, I thought was really, really good, but I also thought that she just did more of what she does. Yeah. Like, I've seen her in a couple games now, and she sounds the same in everyone. Her vocal range and her like emotional portrayal of Mael's grief was excellent.
Yeah,
but I don't think that she did anything sort of particularly stand out for me, like as a voice actress, personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Ben Starr just sounded like Ben Starr as well, though. It's just like Ben Starr happens to sound like he's like the new Morgan Freeman, basically. Like
he's just Clive. Like in every game now, he's Clive, except in Date Everything, where he's not Clive.
He's a where he's Dory in the door. That,
no, he's the door, and Neil Newman is the dryer that you can fuck. But anyway, sorry.
Thank you so much for giving me permission to play a Ninja Sex Party song during the break. It's going to be such whiplash tonally compared to what this entire podcast is about.
Yeah, about depressive depictions of grief in video games. And then
a song about 69 with a vacuum cleaner. Yeah,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah. And penis jiggle physics. Don't forget that.
Yeah, that jiggle
physics. Oh, yeah, we did actually have that in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll take away from this game is And I think why it's stood out to so many people is it really is bucking the trend of AAA game design at the present by making it so meaningful with the story, making it it's odd and it's got a weird art direction, but I think the story is why it stands out from everything else out there, because it's tackling these very difficult topics of grief.
It's not the story, it's that it has something to say, and the story is just the way it's doing it.
Yeah. So it's tackling these themes of grief that, you know, that's hard stuff to tackle in an 800-page novel, you know, let alone a video game. So that's what I want to take away from it is if anything, those writers and that team need just to take a bow, because how they handle it.
Sure, they get their chance. They're winning something at the
Games. Oh yeah, it's got to be the story of the year, or you know, but at the very least. So
I mean, we don't know what else is coming potentially, but it seems like a pretty solid front runner. But yeah. Then A Thousand Times Resist didn't even get nominated last year, so far.
Yeah. So yeah, that's my takeaway from it, I guess, is all. I just want to, yeah. I think everyone should check this game out at the very least.
Impressed that they did a lot of what you would normally be hand waved away as anime bullshit, but because they managed the French art house, and a whole lot of people who normally would just bounce off this and make fun of it were like 100% drawn in and like, oh, I get it now. Sometimes this weird abstract stuff has meaning and it works once you just kind of roll with it.
Yeah. There is a bit of that too, yeah. I think that probably for a lot of Americans and Australians and you know, Anglo-Saxon people, the French style is easier to digest than something that is inherently Japanese.
I mean, yeah, I mean, even when Renoir like first shows up, like he's like an anime villain. He's just this crazy overpowered dude who like literally just blasts everybody away. Like he's a bit of golden spiky hair away from being Dragon Ball.
A lot of yelling. He doesn't yell as much as Dragon Ball.
No, there's not enough filler between like him appearing and him killing people.
Yeah, he didn't spend half an hour going ah, no. Charging up.
No, this is the Netflix era where like everything's 10 episodes long and they don't have to like fill every single
400 episodes.
Yeah.
But yeah. I guess final thoughts?
Oh, how do I loved this game. I review a lot of games and I play a lot of games, and there's not a lot of games that stick with me when I'm done with them. But this one, like, I still think about this game almost every day because it had such a resounding impact on me, and I think it'll stick with me for a really, really long time. And I think if you haven't played it yet, please do. It's so, like, it'll make you cry and it'll ruin your life, but it'll be so worth it.
Yeah. I'm I think everyone should play this game. Whether or not it's for you, I don't know, and I'm sure it won't be for some people, but it's certainly worth, even if you don't generally like this turn-based style of game, I think you need to give this one a go. That's just how I feel about it.
Yeah, I don't think I was as emotionally rocked as you two were, but was it the guys from Baldur's Gate 3 were probably right when they're saying, like, the reason they think this game succeeded is they clearly made it for someone.
Yep.
Which is a thing I've been coming back to a little bit this year. Is like, that's what I want from games. I want games to be made for someone, not clumped together to try and appeal to everybody.
Everyone, yeah.
And so what they've made is something that is, like truly sincere and unique. Like, it's a lot of pieces that we've seen before. If you play Japanese style RPGs, and like most of the elements here, like they just kind of fuse them together in a way that makes sense for the French developers, I get. But yeah, like, and as a result of it, like, because it appeals, like, they're okay, there's a certain people they're gonna like it, and they clearly do. And then, like, you know, the word just starts to getting out, and then like that creates more curiosity, and it's gonna spread. And it is one of those things, like, yeah, everybody should at least look into it.
Mm.
Especially now that I think they've patched it so that the easy mode actually does give you a decent enough window for parrying, because my understanding was like that was just impenetrable for some people.
Yeah.
But it's such a weird fusion of like super grim with really intense Devil May Cry Devil May Cry inspired turn-based combat.
Yes. And yeah, it just feels like nothing else out there, I guess. So
yeah, it's very unique.
Mm.
It's felt as well that the whole 25 hours thing is like a really nice thing.
That's a nice, it's like a nice chunk of gameplay. Really is.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a big, meaty 90-hour game, this is not for you. But then there are so many of those for you, and you can probably find a bunch of them for $10 in Steam sale at the moment.
But they, you know, there's Metaphor and Persona are both on sale at the moment. You know,
yeah,
so.
I bet you can get Persona 4 PS4 version, Persona 5, whatever, quite cheap.
Yep.
That's also a good game that will occupy you for 90 hours or so. Maybe even more, actually. Like, that game is bloated.
But play this one. Play this one instead. Don't play that.
Well, they both have their merits.
Play this one first. It's only 20 hours.
It is.
If you got 90 hours, you got 20 hours. Play this goddamn game.
Yes.
True is that. I mean, yeah, the more catch is like having such a strong sense of style, it does mean there will always be people who will also be like, that's not for me, which I guess is fine.
And that's fine. You're allowed to like what you like.
Even if you are wrong.
Game.
Yeah, if it's not this game, then like, don't talk to me, we're not friends.
But yeah, the same thing as complimenting when we were first talking about it about a month or two ago. It was like, yeah, they fucking made this in Unreal Engine 5, and thank God somebody made an Unreal Engine 5 game that does not look immediately like Unreal Engine 5.
Yeah. I think that'll happen more and more now that the developers have got more of a handle on it.
I hope so, because remember the Unreal Engine 3 era? It took a while. Like, there were a lot of games that looked identical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
probably
I think
wrap it up.
We're all like, all right, cool. That game was good. It was sad at the end. Still.
It was sad the whole way through. Every second. Okay, not every second. There was a good 5% of the game that wasn't sad. It was 20 hours of depression. And it was so good.
Mm.
I feel like Jen like just needs to go to like a French and
therapy?
Russian like therapy, French and Russian like film festival and like just kind of just get.
No, I don't want to feel
sadness
things
into her, mate. You just said this is your favorite game ever.
Yeah, but I'll probably... I mean, no, I will play this again. I will 100% play this again. But this is my one thing that will make me feel things. Everything else, now it's like back to Billy Madison. I'm not a very deep person, okay?
You said it, not me.
Yeah, we'll let that be your own.
Yeah.
Grim words. Anyway, Jen, do you have anything that you want to like pimp before we like finally sign off on this?
No. I don't use social media. Don't look for me. You won't find me. I don't want to talk to you anyway.
I mean, clearly you didn't even buy a webcam at any point in the last 20 years, so.
No, I hate you guys. Thanks for having me. It's been great.
Yep.
This is why you're happy, though. You don't have any social media. It all makes sense now. That's
exactly.
Why you're not used to grief.
Yeah, exactly.
She used to have social media. I think we bullied her off it.
Yeah. Probs.
Probably made it. I mean, she probably won that, to be fair.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm the loser here without social media.
Well.
Yeah, you so. You. I mean, I guess you're just going to. We don't know when this episode's going to land, so saying what have you got in the, like, burner pot for the site is perhaps a little bit redundant.
It is. It is. So just head over to Player 2 and check out everything, because that would be really good. And also on Puso at Blue Sky, if you want to hear me waffle shit or put my cooking photos up.
Yeah, you'll get some barbecue pics if you...
I've been doing a lot of camp oven cooking lately, trying to get my camping recipes down pat, so...
Yeah. Ready for the apocalypse. That house is going to blow up, so I've got to live out of a tent. You at least want to eat decently still.
Exactly.
Yeah, meanwhile, I am at Pretend Beard, and I generally use my stove when I'm cooking. Stove in my... I live in Japan, so like a full-size oven is also out of the question.
Yeah. full-size anything's out of the question.
Yeah.
Pan's a decent size. We should manage to get a decent, like, decent kitchen counter.